W252DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Biden travels to Poland tomorrow to mark 1 year since Russia invaded Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told ABC's This Week it's important to not only make sure that Ukraine has enough weapons and ammunition, but also sufficient training and knows how to maintain the equipment.
You have to make sure that they can maintain them. If they're not trained on them, they can't use them. If they don't know how to maintain them and they fall apart within a week, it's not going to do you a lot of good. And you also have to make sure that they're using all of these things in a comprehensive way.
He also told ABC News he did not receive an apology from China's foreign minister when the two met at the Munich Security Conference, but he told him that China's balloon surveillance was not acceptable. Residents in East Palestine, Ohio, say they're still skeptical of claims that the air and water is safe after a freight train derailed and hazardous chemicals were discharged. Authorities in the Philadelphia area have arrested an 18-year-old in connection with a fatal shooting of a Temple University police officer Saturday. This is ABC News. North Korea launched its first missile since New Year's Day on Saturday. It was believed to be an intercontinental ballistic missile. It landed in the Sea of Japan. In response, the U.S. and South Korea carried out exercises involving at least one U.S. strategic bomber. State lawmakers in Washington are pushing to rehire government workers who were fired over COVID mandates. King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn is one of two lawmakers introducing legislation that would create hiring preferences for state and local employees.
We have 100 deputy vacancies here in King County, and crime is at an all-time high. And so what we need are those folks back on the job working hard to keep our community safe.
An auxiliary bishop in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles was fatally shot Saturday in his home. Investigators say Bishop David O'Connell, who was a priest and bishop for 45 years, was found with a gunshot wound in his upper torso. And the green flag drops on the Daytona 500 just after 3 p.m. Eastern. Alex Bowman is on pole. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Monday's mass shooting at Michigan State University is still sending shockwaves at colleges and universities across America. Students in Wisconsin can get help if they're feeling overwhelmed by campus violence. Here's more from Mike Mohn.
Mary Kay Battaglia is with the Wisconsin office of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. She says seeing these headlines only adds to the stress many college students already carry during the academic year.
Most people that go to college campuses are moving away from home. They're changing their friends. And sometimes you're moving in with someone you've never met. And so moving to college can create a lot of anxiety and stress that you may or may not have exhibited prior.
That's on top of balancing coursework. Natalia says it's important to be open to learning some coping skills if these symptoms begin to surface. While each school typically has some form of mental health outreach, there are also NAMI on-campus clubs led by students at various state colleges. Natalia notes that even if you are showing more signs of stress and anxiety, it doesn't necessarily mean you have a mental illness.
It means that your mental health at that time is not where it should be or may not be where it could be. And reaching out for help or finding good coping skills is something that you can get from a counseling service on your campus.
She adds at least today's college students are trying to navigate these issues at a time of greater mental health awareness. According to NAMI, nearly three-quarters of mental health conditions emerge by age 24, meaning many students are dealing with them for the first time and may not know where to turn for help. Mike Mohn, Wisconsin News Connection. Find our Ray Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
In Wisconsin, we want elected officials who serve our communities. We want laws that protect our basic human rights. On February 21st, there's a primary election. Let's come together to vote for judges who uphold our rights and local officials who champion laws that protect our families. Let's empower our families and friends to vote. Visit vote411.org to learn about the candidates and find unbiased election information for the primary election on February 21st. Visit vote411.org.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome to our second hour here, our discussion, our analysis, our review of those major stories in government and law, and the aspiration for justice in America. In our first hour, spending a lot of time talking to some of you, calling in at 844-967-2789 about this major story this past week having to do with Dominion voting machines and the likely success that that company will have in proving its case of defamation against Fox News for knowingly putting on the air the notion that Dominion was responsible for somehow compromising the 2020 election, and more broadly, Fox News knowing to this day that the 2020 election was not stolen, was not the product of some illegal undermining, but nonetheless continuing to pursue that notion, that reporting on the air, as revealed by many of the internal texts, an awful lot of information also suggesting that Dominion did this. Why? Because they were concerned about defecting viewers, people who might have been impacted by their announcement early on that Donald Trump had won the state of Arizona, probably won the entire, had lost the state of Arizona and had lost the entire 2020 election. As a result of that, concern about people leaving the network and seemed concerned about the impact that this news would have, this announcement would have on even their profitability, and that justifying internal to Fox News the notion that we lie and we go ahead to maintain those viewers, to keep them on the air, to keep them tuning in, even though we know that what we're saying on the air is false and that we do not, in fact, believe the very things that we're saying. Looking forward to the trial of that in April and looking forward to some disposition of that should be in the attention span, the attention focus of all Americans, looking not only in Fox News in this area, but in other areas as well. A much related news story also, kind of a footnote to that, kind of fell under the radar on many newspaper headlines, but nonetheless important, revealed this past week that during the course of the right after the 2020 election, the Trump Organization commissioned a group called the Berkeley Research Group to analyze voting data from about six states around the country, specifically asking them to probe whether there was any fraud, any irregularities that occurred in the 2020 election. The focus of their time period, this assignment from the Trump campaign, was right after the 2020 election, again, when Donald Trump lost the election to Joe Biden, and the remaining weeks of 2020, and right before the January 6th insurrection of 2021 at the United States Capitol. This commission to Berkeley Research Group to try to figure out whether there was any actual fraud. Areas of focus for the probe were voter machine malfunctions, things like allegations that great numbers of deceased individuals had voted, some other evidence perhaps that could point to a Trump victory, again, according to the reporting on this commission given to this investigative research group. Comes back, turns out, the report comes back and says, nope, no indication whatsoever that there was, in fact, any voter fraud. Comes back with just the opposite result, that Joe Biden won the key swing states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and yes, right here in Wisconsin, which were all a part of that Berkeley analysis, but were long deemed to be highly competitive during the presidential cycle. They basically looked at everything. They looked at change of addresses, illegal immigrants, ballot harvesting, this notion of capturing ballots of other people and turning them in, people voting twice, machines being tampered with, ballots that were sent to vacant addresses that returned and voted, all these kinds of crazy theories out there that would suggest that the vote had been skewed. This company comes back and says, Trump campaign, nothing there, nothing to look at, nothing to digest, literally everything you could think of, they investigated, and the voter turnout anomalies, all these kinds of things alleged by the Trump campaign, turns out none of them are true. The reporting on this and coming out this week, not only of that report, but the fact, of course, that in the wake of the receipt of that report by the Trump campaign, the decision not to release it, not to release, again, further information that the Trump campaign and the president at that time knew that he had lost, and his own commissioned analysis through this Berkeley research group proved just that. The news this past week of the commissioning of that report, the return of that report finding no fraud, and the decision by the Trump campaign not to release it. A parallel, a bookend, if you will, to our discussion about what's going on in Fox News as well. This notion that we know what the truth is, and we're purposefully saying just the opposite. We've got another caller on the line, Jean from Eau Claire. You've called in this morning. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you so much. Hey, outstanding. I wish you had longer. I wish we had more of you every week. It's just outstanding. So I'll get real quick to the point. This seems like a criminal enterprise to me, with its tendrils all over in all of our states, all the money that's been wasted, all the lies that have been spread that really attacks the very premise of our democracy and our voting with outright fraudulent lies. And, you know, who investigates something like this? Because this is detrimental to everyone. I mean, even the severe increases in psychological depression, older people, suicides, things like this. Because when we see reality altered like they have by these type of means, this is significant impacts on everybody's lives. And who would be responsible for some kind of remedies to make sure this doesn't happen again, to make sure these people are punished, and who is protecting the people? Because this has been devastating. It's broken families up. All kinds of money's been spent. Look at our state with the big fake investigation that's over $2 million now. You know, and it still keeps going.
It keeps going.
Fox still hasn't spoken out what they've spread. I mean, what can we do as people, and who is responsible? Who's responsible for remedies and maybe some, you know, punishments and things like that? Because we were in bad shape there. I watched live. I was watching when that happened. And I've never seen anything like it, and we never want this to happen again.
Absolutely. Jean,
thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Absolutely. Jean, appreciate all those good comments. Again, going to the question, you know, why is this important and what do we do about it, right? And so, again, all callers, tremendously insightful. I'm going to unpackage a couple of things that you said, Jean, there. First of all, the impact on this big lie upon our nation. Again, Dominion talks about its loss of profitability and $1.6 billion in damages. And we talk about other things related to the impact upon individuals, which is huge. It is catastrophic. And we'll get to Georgia in just a moment by virtue of your invitation and the syllabus we have this morning. But beyond that, great point, Gene, the impact upon our national psyche, right? This notion that we're spending all this time believing that somehow our elections are not credible, that people who are responsible, clerks, local clerks, poll workers, all those kinds of people who we will see again this Tuesday and then again in April in the state of Wisconsin as we vote here in the days and weeks just ahead, that somehow this process is not credible And beyond that, that our entire psyche, our nation generally has been corrupted, if you will, by virtue of bad elections. Nothing could be further from the truth. And so it's very important to your very good point, Gene, that not only we push back on these things, the Dominion lawsuit, other things we're going to talk about in this very hour. And the answer to the question, who remedies this? Well, in part, we all remedy it, right? Right? All of us as citizens should be out there talking about the results of this discovery released in the Dominion lawsuit this just past week. You've got statements by the very people on the air, Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, acknowledging that these other people, in their words, are nuts, and nonetheless going on the air and saying just the opposite. Talk about that, right? Articulate that out there to establish that the people, including the former president, who continue to articulate this unsupported view, are simply wrong, and they're doing it out of malice. They're doing it out of an attempt to continue to acquire and maintain power and for money. Beyond that, the very practical response, Gene, to your very good question is, who remedies this? Well, there are some government entities that are remedying this, and that leads us to our next two stories, again, at the core of our discussion. Let's go to Georgia, as I indicated. We know from our past discussions a woman named Fani Willis. She is the DA in Fulton County. That's basically Atlanta in Georgia. She has been conducting for about two years, this investigation of whether or not Donald Trump and many other people undermined the Georgia election. You may recall well his call to Brad Raffensperger, who's the Secretary of State, looking for additional votes so that he could be declared the winner of the electoral votes coming out of Georgia. That's what we all know. We've heard that on tape repeatedly. Fani Willis obviously expanding the investigation to determine not just whether Donald Trump intended and had the purpose of trying to undermine that vote, but what others did as well. And so she has called many, many people in front of a special grand jury over the period of the past year or so, and those number about 75 altogether, to determine whether or not there is a basis for returning charges for violations of Georgia election law, things done by Donald Trump, things done by others, including, once again, Rudy Giuliani, other people who may have been involved in misrepresentations to the Georgia legislature, to the people of Georgia generally, about what had happened and what had not happened in Georgia. Investigating all that before this special fact-finding grand jury, Fani Willis supervising that. This past week, major, major news, maybe the most important news of the week, coming out of Georgia. What did that special grand jury find? We know about three things, at least three things coming out of that special grand jury, because the judge who's presiding over this process, ordered released some portions of the report of that special grand jury. He released an introductory period, a portion of it. He released a conclusory, a portion of it, and then some internal information as well. And this is basically what the report says coming out of Georgia. Once again, consistent with our theme this morning, you've got 26 people on a grand jury reviewing all this evidence over a period of months in Georgia. And what do they find? No fraud. No fraud whatsoever. As the state attorney general, the others in Georgia establish, no fraud. When we come back, we're going to talk about the other major findings coming out of this report released just this past week out of Georgia. I'm going to talk about the likelihood of charges coming out of the state of Georgia for this kind of behavior. We'll talk about that right after this coming break.
Wisconsin's spring primary election is Tuesday, February 21st, and your local Civic Media radio station will be tracking the results.
Special live coverage starts at 7 p.m., and News Director Terry Bell, with a team of political experts, will be following which candidates, both local and in the state Supreme Court race, move on to April.
Spring primary election coverage live, Tuesday, February 21st, starting at 7, here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Mondays, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 43. Westerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Lows level off around 25. Tonight, cloudy skies expected. Cloudy skies tomorrow. Chance for snow. Highs level off around 39. A dusting of snow tomorrow with another 3 to 5 inches Tuesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 41.
Fox Valley regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
Welcome back. We are talking in this second hour of our Saturday morning broadcast about this major news coming out of Fulton County, Georgia. That is the partial release report of a special grand jury convened by Fannie Willis, the DA there in Atlanta. And what is that special grand jury? Again, a group of 26 people, citizens out there, brought together to review information, to hear witnesses, to review documents, and recommend, make findings about what they saw before them. What did they say first? Unanimously, all 26 of them, according to the report, the portion of it released by the judge, unanimously, every single one of them rebutted claims of widespread fraud in Georgia. That is the kind of thing we're talking about all this morning on our broadcast. Nothing bad happened in the 2020 election to suggest that Donald Trump did in fact win when in fact Joe Biden won the election. We know that. And it's true in Georgia as well. That's what the special grand jury found as a result of its about 7 or 8 month investigation of all of this. During the course of that investigation, now again, a portion of that released, about 75 people altogether testified before that grand jury. We know some of them. We know that those included Rudy Giuliani. We know that David Schaefer, the head of the Georgia Republican Party, also appeared before that grand jury. Other notable people that we've talked about on this show, their names, Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, appearing there in front of that special grand jury based upon his attempts, his communications to perhaps impact the election there as well. Mark Meadows, also the now former chief of staff of the White House for Donald Trump, also testified presumably before that grand jury. And what does the grand jury say about some of that testimony? We don't know exactly who, but the grand jury also says, and this again, this is a majority of them believe, that perjury may have been committed by one or more witnesses. Perjury may have been committed by one or more of those witnesses. Again, we don't know exactly who it was who committed perjury, but significant that majority say that. The other reason, a footnote to that, the reason why that's so significant is you've got a grand jury here who's winnowing and sifting. Why? How do you know that? Because a majority, again, not all of them, not all the grand jurors, not all 26 of them found that perjury may have occurred. With respect to no fraud, all of them did this. So there is some disagreement among the members of this grand jury. That's a good thing. That shows you that these people are analyzing what is before them, and they're coming to these conclusions based upon a reasoned, critical analysis of the information before them. The catalyst, again, for this investigation, as we all know, this call made by Donald Trump to Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, pressing him to find 11,780 votes, one more than he needs to obtain all the Electoral College votes coming out of Georgia. Significant, not only because of the findings here, but because of what is going to happen next. Fannie Willis has said already that she is going to be presumably making some charging decisions imminently. Those are coming out imminently. That's her word, not mine. And she's also talked about future defendants. All of these more than tea leaves indicating that charges are going to come out of Georgia very soon. She's got the obligation now under state law to present the findings of this special grand jury to a charging grand jury, a second body of people. They will be sworn in about 10 days from now, 10 to 12 days from now in early March. And they will then be presented with the results of the special grand jury findings. And then Fannie Willis can make determinations about what she would like them to do. She only has the power to recommend. It is still a grand jury that has the decision-making authority to return or not return charges. They're the ones who are the ones who are going to make the decision about those charges. But she is plainly going to make recommendations to them about what she feels these results of the special grand jury show. Highly likely that among some of these people who testified, she is going to recommend charges, and that may very well include the former president, Donald Trump. And so we need to anticipate that sometime, the prediction here is sometime in March, maybe April, but it's probably March, she is going to be announcing publicly some charges coming out of this charging grand jury, imminently coming, future defendants, as she said, related to whether or not there was fraud committed, an attempt to commit fraud, not successful, but an attempt nonetheless to undermine the election through the words, the actions of Donald Trump and other people in his ambit for doing just that. That will be huge news. If that happens, that will be, of course, the first time in our nation's history that a former president is charged with a crime. And so we need to be very thoughtful and attentive to that news when it comes out. It's possible she could do this in a number of different indictments. She could charge a group of people initially. Maybe some of those will include some of the people we've identified here. Maybe not. Could be that she will return an omnibus indictment. We've talked about the RICO possibility, charging a large corporate entity, if you will, with trying to undermine the election there in Georgia. All kinds of options available to her, but probably happening in the weeks and certainly months just ahead. Huge news coming up out of Georgia from the pen, not only of Fannie Willis, but also significantly, this convened charging grand jury in Fulton County that sometime soon is going to tell us what's going to happen with the results of this nearly year-long grand jury review, almost a two-year analysis by Fannie Willis and the DA's office there in Fulton County. Looking forward to all of that. Significantly, a final comment about this. And then we're going to take some callers right after the break. Donald Trump, in response to this release this past week, portrayed the contents very differently. In a post on Truth Social, he wrote, "Thank you, special grand jury, the great state of Georgia. Total exoneration. The USA is very proud of you." Misunderstanding completely that the very fact that he was not mentioned signals that likely he is a target of this investigation. The fact that he was not called as a witness suggests strongly, strongly that he may in fact be among those defendants. Right after the break, we're trying to talk more about the implications of all of this. Stay with us for that further discussion.
Your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Biden travels to Poland tomorrow to mark 1 year since Russia invaded Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told ABC's This Week it's important to not only make sure that Ukraine has enough weapons and ammunition, but also sufficient training and knows how to maintain the equipment.
You have to make sure that they can maintain them. If they're not trained on them, they can't use them. If they don't know how to maintain them and they fall apart within a week, it's not going to do you a lot of good. And you also have to make sure that they're using all of these things in a comprehensive way.
He also told ABC News he did not receive an apology from China's foreign minister when the two met at the Munich Security Conference, but he told him that China's balloon surveillance was not acceptable. Residents in East Palestine, Ohio, say they're still skeptical of claims that the air and water is safe after a freight train derailed and hazardous chemicals were discharged. Authorities in the Philadelphia area have arrested an 18-year-old in connection with a fatal shooting of a Temple University police officer Saturday. This is ABC News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride.
J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. The timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi.
Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bride. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
They can't tell you one thing that Ron Johnson has done to support them. I don't understand that. I never will understand it. I know we've got conservative listeners, but I asked them to point to one thing that Ron Johnson has done to make their lives any better, and they can't point to any of it.
Conversations that hit home every day. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's in your mind, Gina Beauclair?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's in your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Talking this morning about all things election 2020, the fact that there was no fraud and Joe Biden was properly elected our president, contrary to what Donald Trump, contrary to what people at Fox News and other places continue to articulate into America. Right before the break, we were talking about this report released by a district court judge in Fulton County of the findings by a special grand jury investigating whether there was an attempt to undermine the election results in Georgia by the former president and by other people. Finding, again, no fraud in the voting itself, nothing to see here suggesting that the vote was not properly done. Second, that people may have committed perjury among the 75 witnesses, and plainly recommending that Fani Willis, who is the DA, pursue charges against some people. Now, significantly, in this excerpt from the report, no indication of who those people may be, but plainly indicating that there was an attempt in Georgia to do what's contrary to Georgia law. Right before the break, I was talking about the misunderstanding by Donald Trump about the results of this. He congratulates the grand jury for exonerating him when, in fact, just the opposite is true. Under Georgia law, prosecutors are prohibited from calling into a grand jury people that they know to be a target, that is, a likely defendant of a case. They can call in subjects, witnesses, but targets, for the most part, probably not. And in fact, they're prohibited from doing that. And so the very fact that Donald Trump was not called in among these other witnesses suggests that he may be on the list of targets. And of course, beyond that, we just don't know. We just don't know who is on the list of people that this special grand jury identified as being responsible for the attempt to overthrow the election results, unsuccessful, but nonetheless, the attempt in Georgia. We appreciate so much our callers calling in at 844-967-2789. Joe, you have been waiting for a very long time. Joe, thanks for calling back in this morning. Always appreciate your good comment and your thoughtful perspectives.
Thanks as always, Jim. It's a terrific show yet again, a chock full of information. And I know you had said at the head of the show that you and your producer are looking at doing a three-parter starting next week about the Supreme Court and trying to elucidate that and educate us even more about that institution. I would add into that, and this extends out to the Dominion case, that one of the things that you also were highlighting, that this is the anniversary of a decision about Japanese and interning yes. Japanese Americans during World War II and the injustice of that. I would add into that discussion, and I hope to broaden this a little bit by saying I knew a woman who from the Seattle area whose grandpa had been and grandma had mm-hmm. been affected by that. They were rounded up and taken away from their property in Washington State. They had a farm, they had a house, and she said one of the most outrageous things, in addition to their losing their freedom, is that they lost their property. They lost their house and their farm. And I think about that when I think about the generational losses that can occur from particular decisions that are made, such as the Dred Scott decision or this
Absolutely.
One. So I would hope that in your series on the Supreme Court that you might just give a moment to think of this little suggestion of recognizing that these cases can come down to individual people or individual business. In the case of Dominion, I remember reading that a lawyer had said about this case 6-8 months ago that he'd never seen such a slam dunk in defamation. Now, that's not necessarily, I mean, nothing's a slam dunk, I don't think, in law. But one of the points he made was it is clear that all sorts of people purchasing on a statewide level an election system, if this injustice were not addressed, would say, well, we can't trust Dominion. And there is a monetary cost in the same way that Japanese Americans who lost property and lost the years that they might have been working and earning money had a monetary hit from what happened to them. And so I just think it's important to recognize that this Dominion case is not necessarily $1.6 billion in damages just because they have hurt feelings. It has to do with the fact that their product has been slammed and a business that they had spent, you know, a great deal of energy and time and money creating, and the employees that are involved, the shareholders that are involved, are hurt by the inaccurate, wrong words of people like the hosts of Fox News. So
Absolutely.
I guess I just wanted to tie it up to its individual and its consequences,
yes.
even though we're talking about big court decisions.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Jim. I'll listen to your response off
Joe,
there.
Always so very, very thoughtful. And yes, I will not only take that commission, Calvin and I will, as we go into these series of Supreme Court cases. We are going to be highlighting some things, exactly as you said, Joe, that cases that are out there in the public domain, we don't recognize the way in which they continue to have tendrils into 2023. Absolutely. Things like the Korematsu decision that affirmed this internment executive order by FDR that basically codified it into American law. Now, we know that in 1948, shortly after that executive order was issued, almost immediately, people began to recognize that there was, in fact, as Joe, you just said, this very individual impact, not just a big policy horror, but an impact upon individuals. And so 1948, the American Evacuation Claims Act that made some token payments for some commercial losses didn't come anywhere near contemplating compensating all the people who are affected by that internment. And again, as I said before, in 1988, an attempt additionally, $20,000 to people who were affected. Again, a pure pittance, right, when it comes to trying to redress the grievances that they legitimately have. And Joe, your very good point about that and also Dominion, that these kinds of things we talk about in our history, they're all taking place on the plane of individual people, families, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, uncles, aunts, children, right? Property, individual relationships. They have this huge impact. And the same is true, Joe, as you just said about this Dominion lawsuit. It is an impact upon the credibility of Dominion and its capacity down the road to continue to sell its products, even though those may change down the road and advance as its own technology advances. We all know that even the pendency of the lawsuit sometimes prompts people to say, well, gee, wasn't that company involved in that lawsuit? There was an allegation of something improper. Well, it turns out, yeah, they were involved in the lawsuit. Turns out they're completely untrue. And I would join the lawyer whose words you had consumed, Joe. This may not be a slam dunk, but under New York Times versus Sullivan, actual malice, it is difficult to imagine a case where the evidence is more compelling than it is in this instance. And again, if it goes to trial, fascinating to watch it being presented in a courtroom of the United States of America. Again, the impact upon that company. But even if it's settled, comments made by Dominion and others talking about the impact, yes, financially upon the corporation, and more broadly, again, to your very important point, the impact upon individuals inside the company, and yes, indeed, on all of us, right? This continuing lie perpetuated by Fox News, by the former president, by people in his ambit that suggests that what happened in 2020 was not real and should be revisited and taken back. Completely wrong. The impact, as you and some other callers have indicated, on individuals and upon all of us, a huge impact upon the history of America. I will take up that invitation, Joe. Thank you for making it. We're going to be talking about those kinds of things in these upcoming shows. Let's also talk, again, beyond just what's happening in the grand jury, the special grand jury, the indicting grand jury in Georgia. Let's also go back to Washington, D.C. A while back, Gene asked about who remedies these things, who takes care of them. Well, we know that in addition to the state remedies having to do with the investigation we just talked about in Georgia, we also know that the federal government, the U.S. Department of Justice, under Jack Smith, who is the AG, the Attorney General appointed special counsel, is looking also at January 6th and more broadly at attempts to undermine the election, not just on that day, but also before and after. Some significant news coming out of his work, again, in Washington, D.C., related in terms of substance, but in a different jurisdiction, right? Difference between Fani Willis in the state of Georgia and Jack Smith, and yes, the attorney general in the federal government in Washington, D.C., looking at the same kinds of things, determining whether there should be federal charges issued against the former president, against others who might also be facing some criminal culpability in the state of Georgia, maybe other places as well. What happened just this past week? Two significant things that indicate that Jack Smith, again, as a part of his grand jury work, his focus there in Washington, D.C., he has also convened at least one, maybe there was a prior grand jury as well, but at least one grand jury, again, 26 people under the federal rules of criminal procedure, called in, summoned in to hear evidence of federal crimes. We know that he is presenting an awful lot of witnesses in the same way that Fani Willis is doing the same sorts of things in Georgia. He is also calling in witnesses to do what? To ask them about conversations that they had with each other, text messages, communications, memorandums, all things written, conversations with the president before January 6th, during January 6th, on that day, after January 6th, to figure out whether or not there was an intent, whether or not there was a purpose, a knowing attempt to try to undermine the election. The president certainly, once again, on the top of that target list of that investigation as well. You can do both. You can do a state prosecution and a federal prosecution charged under different statutes, a different regime, if you will, of criminal laws. One does not prohibit the other. One does not preempt the other. Oftentimes, judges will make decisions about which case will go first. But the fact that we have these two parallel proceedings going on, federal grand jury under Jack Smith and his people in Washington, D.C., Fannie Willis in Georgia, also pursuing the same kinds of things under Georgia law. This past week, Jack Smith does what? He does two very significant things. He subpoenas in two additional fact witnesses. Frankly, as I look at this, I wonder aloud why it is these folks have not appeared previously. I think in the lists of anybody that you would call in trying to figure out what happened in Washington on January 6th, who would you put at the top of those lists? Who would that be? That would be Mike Pence, right? The vice president at the time. What was he doing at the time? He was standing there with Nancy Pelosi. And what were they doing in the well of the Congress? They were counting electoral votes coming in from all 50 states. They were doing what the Constitution prescribes, James Madison, George Mason prescribed 200 years ago. And it was in the midst of that that the Capitol was under siege, this attack, this attempt at insurrection. And plainly, a lot of people have a lot of insight, a lot of information about what happened that day. But we know that Mike Pence had conversations with the now former president on that day, certainly before that day. We believe from some of the reporting that the former president called his own vice president a wimp for not doing what the president wanted him to do, which is find that the electoral votes should not be counted or that they were invalid. So Mike Pence subpoenaed in to appear before this grand jury to talk about, presumably, the things that he said and that the former president said to him. Pence already indicated that he is going to fight that subpoena. And so Jack Smith, along with other cases already pending in the federal district court under the chief judge there, is going to be fighting that under a theory of attorney-client, or rather executive privilege between the vice president and the president. And again, the significant point to make there is executive privilege protects an awful lot of things, including discussions about substance, does not include discussions about what? About crime. And if there are discussions in an attempt to overthrow the nation, to undermine the electoral count, the process established by the Constitution, that is not protected by executive privilege. And so a judge will ultimately find that that privilege does not apply. But we know now that Jack Smith is going to be contesting the position taken by the vice president coming up now in the federal district court. We also know that Jack Smith did one other thing, and that is he also subpoenaed the former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Again, an individual with an awful lot of information, presumably lots of conversations with the president before, during, and after January 6th. Key fact witnesses before the grand jury in Washington, D.C., and again, probably likely going to be contested by the former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. All of that coming up as a part of that federal investigation. We're going to talk about a couple of other matters in our final moments here on the broadcast. Stay with us for that right after this break.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Rick Smith Show. where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon with a high of 43. Winds out of the west, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies tonight, lows dip down to about 25. Overcast again tomorrow. Chance for snow, highs level off around 39. A dusting of snow tomorrow with another 3 to 5 inches Tuesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 41.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
Segment on our Saturday morning broadcast, but still a lot of territory to pursue in these last moments, including another caller, Jack from Merrimack, calling in. Appreciate your comment, your thought, or your perspective this morning, Jack.
Yeah, I'm just wondering when this whole thing is going to actually be over. It's been over 2 years. The guy that basically fomented a rebellion against the United States of America is now running to go into back into office so he can do the same thing again. Even Mitch McConnell, after hypocritically voting to acquit him during the impeachment trial, stated about Trump, there is, and I think this is a pretty close to the quote, there is no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for January 6th. I mean, when are they going to start charging these guys? This is ridiculous. I'm sorry, but it is.
And Jack, you know, your sense of outrage, I think, is well placed. It has been well over 2 years, right, since the insurrection of 2021. We know that some of this conspiracy was happening even before that time period. And as much as it is important, absolutely, to cross T's and dot I's, both with respect to state prosecutions, state investigations, and federal investigations, we know that there are an awful lot of people, including, for example, our last story of the day is going to be talking about, again, the Proud Boys and some of the insurrection trials going on there as well. Donald Trump has still not been charged. I am hopeful. I am anticipating that coming out of Georgia, as I said in our prior segment, Fannie Willis will be telling us what she is doing very, very soon. And yes, indeed, I think, Jack, your concern about timing with respect to the federal government, it has now come to that time. And even though Jack Smith is still calling these fact witnesses, we need to be focused on timeliness. Sometimes said, you know, obviously that justice, a delayed justice denied. I could not share your views more strongly and regard that as a very, very important point. Need to get done with this and need to move on then, right? Prosecute those people, including the former president, responsible for it, and then move on to a time when we put all this behind us. But that time only comes after justice is done. The rule of law applies to everyone, including a former president. Could not agree more, Jack. Jake, also calling in from Eureka. Jake, glad to have you with us this morning. Your comment or your question?
Well, first I'd like to ask a question, then second I'd like to make a statement about something in the news real quick. First of all, the question is on January 6th. I haven't heard much recently about those missing Secret Service messages, the text messages. They all went missing for some reason in the day or two, around the 6th of January. First of all, I'd like to know if they've been found, and if so, is anybody in the Secret Service potentially going to be found to be on Trump's team in terms of overturning the election and making him dictator. And the thing in the news specifically is having to do with gun control. I mean, we just heard there's another six-year-old in Virginia again who took a gun to school. This time they found it before he shot his teacher. And then we have, of course, the massacre in Mississippi that took place yesterday, six people dead. What are we going to do something about banning assault weapons nationally?
Couple of very good thoughts there, Jake. Let me respond to both of them. As to the Secret Service, we know a lot about that just because it percolated up right in connection with the January 6th House Special Select Committee, and an awful lot of information to suggest that there were the Secret Service not forthcoming about what's happening on January 6th. Huge amount of focus on that. Highly likely that Jack Smith is also looking at that portion of this investigation and determining whether or not there was even obstruction of justice in an attempt to not disclose what was going on there. The reporting by the Secret Service about what the president was doing, saying that day, highly relevant, highly material to his findings. So then I would assume that even though the House committee has concluded its work with its 500-page report, that may still be the focus of the Jack Smith grand jury investigation going on in Washington, D.C. Second, as to firearms, we're going to talk about this down the road, especially when it comes to some of the Supreme Court cases of recent time. Firearms continue to be an absolute tragedy in America, right? Too many guns, too many people, access to guns, and we have these continuing situations of not just mass shootings, but human tragedy, as we're talking a lot this morning. Individuals, families destroyed, businesses destroyed, communities destroyed. I share with you your rhetorical call to our leadership, both the state system and the federal system, to do something, especially since we know what can in fact work, that in fact are things like background checks and red flag laws and all those other things that we know, assault weapons bans that worked in this country for the 10 years that they were in fact banned. Put those back in place. Put those in place, and they will have an impact upon the safety and security of our nation. And perhaps one day we don't have to confront every single week, every single day, these stories about human tragedy as a result of firearms. A final comment as we go into our last couple of minutes here about the January 6th investigation, and in particular the sedition trial. This is perhaps my favorite news story of the week. And that is, it comes out of the Proud Boys prosecution that continues, the trial that goes on in front of Judge Timothy Kelly. These are the folks who, again, charged with seditious conspiracy there. In the midst of this trial, in a long-shot move, lawyers for five members of the Proud Boys who are facing these charges in connection with the January 6th attack are seeking to subpoena who? Former President Donald Trump to appear as a witness at the trial. And their notion, their concept is that they want to elicit from Mr. Trump, the former president, to persuade the jury that he, rather than the defendants themselves, instigated the crowd that stormed the Capitol on January 6th. Prosecutors plainly building their case around the fact that these five Proud Boys, that they were the ones who induced dozens of their own members, far-right groups, others in that mob to take the action. Unclear whether the judge, his name again, Timothy Kelly, who's overseeing this case, is going to allow the subpoena. But we know that this request has been now articulated for a second time, and that the five Proud Boy defendants, their names are Enrique Tarrio, Ethan Nordine, Zachary Real, Dominic Pozzola, and Joseph Biggs, may in fact be pursuing this interest in having Donald Trump appear as a witness. Now, highly unlikely that he will actually do that, but under the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, we know well that these defendants, like all others, have a right to call witnesses. Donald Trump, of course, also, as he has done in other settings, has a right to invoke his own Fifth Amendment right. But an interesting story as we close out this morning's program here on the broadcast, thinking about all things January 20th, reaffirming from start to finish that elections in America, including the one this coming week, are legitimate, they're safe. Get out and vote, everybody. And we'll talk with you again next week, Saturday.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing, advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
My ride smells just right, just right, just right, just right.
Y'all gotta try that Febreze car.
Just right, just right, just right, just right. La 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 la. With up to 40 days of consistent scent, all low Febreze car clips right on your vent. You know my car's my happy place. Keep that smile on my face when it smells just right, just right, just right. Breathe happy Febreze.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.